Welcome to Unearthing Paranormalcy, the podcast where we dig into the paranormal and try to find normalcy in the topic. I'm Amy.
I'm Dave.
And I'm Jed.
And today, we have a special guest. We have a paranormal investigation team from Indianapolis, Indiana, PIOT, and they're going to join us here in just a second. And we're so excited to have them.
All right, and we have a correction to make from our Luciferian Mason episode about the Masons. I had a gentleman named Leo comment and say that he had a tiny correction on the Mason Lodge. The lodge that he goes to does not require a belief in a god, but we're adherents to a higher philosophy, like Luciferianism is a typical atheistic, agnostic. He also said that that depends on the lodge. Some do require different beliefs. But then he also said that lodges don't usually do invites because they don't actively recruit. So they want you to seek them out. So if you're interested, you could just go find out when the lodges are having their meetings. You can go onto their websites and find that kind of information or contact the master of the lodge and set up a time to go in and talk to him. But it's not so much invite for all of the lodges. And I'm sure that's different for each lodge, too. But just go into the lodges closest to you, his website, and find out. And you might want to go visit a bunch of lodges before you make your decision. Because each lodge is a little different. Thank you, Leo, for that information.
And here we go. So, we're here today with PIOT, a paranormal investigation group out of Indianapolis, Indiana. And you guys want to introduce yourselves?
Sure, yeah. I can start off with myself. I'm the founder and leading investigator of PIOT Paranormal. My name is Shuler Johnson.
And I'm the promotions manager of PIOT, Jordan Childs.
I'm Nate. I'm the photography specialist, Facebook marketing, and lead investigator.
Ryan, I'm an investigator also, but I also do pictures and videos.
Awesome. So what got you guys into investigating the paranormal?
Nate, you want to start on this one?
Well, I actually met Shuler about a year and a half ago, going on 2 years. I actually work at the Indianapolis Public Library, which is downtown Indianapolis. We celebrated our 100-year anniversary. The old building turned 100 last year, so in celebration in that, we actually invited Shuler's team to come do an investigation at the library. I just so happened to be working there at the time and got to investigate with them for the first time ever. And since then, I had joined the group, still working at the library. And so that's kind of where I got my, you know, first glimpse in, you know, doing anything investigation related.
Very Jordan. Cool.
Ever since as a kid, I've had dealings with the paranormal. So it's kind of stuck with me to this day. And that's what inspired me to be a part of PIOT.
All right, Ryan?
Yeah, I just started about a couple months ago with the group. So I've been interested. I'd never done any types of investigations. So my first one was a couple months ago. So I knew the team, so kind of jumped on as a guest investigator. And then I was brought on as a full-time investigator.
Yeah, good stuff. And everyone's really done a good job since, too, I have to say. Myself, I've actually started the team back in 2011, March 2nd, and what really got me inspired to even form a team is I was introduced to Ghost Adventures through a couple of people back then in high school, and I never really cared about ghosts or anything like that or, you know, spooky stuff until then, and after about maybe a couple months, 3-4 months of watching it, it finally hit me one night, like, hey, you know, how much of this is true? How much of it is Hollywood? So the following morning that I thought about this, I'm like, you know what? Maybe I should make up a team, gather a couple of friends from high school and go out to allegedly haunted locations in my hometown. And that's pretty much what I did. And from there, it started as a hobby and it's now turned into something a little more serious.
That's awesome. Yeah. See, Chad and I kind of did that a little bit when we were younger too. And we, We were going to start COPS, Central Oklahoma Paranormal Society.
Oh, nice.
But before we got it all going, somebody else stole the name and started their own group. So,
wow.
We've just kind of done investigations here and there, but not big time investigations. So you said ghost adventurers got you
yes, ma'am.
Drawn into it. So what do you think about them? Do you think that they're more staged, or do you think they're actually finding real stuff?
Well, thanks for bringing that up.
I get a lot of rap for this. Out of the podcasts I've been on, the people I talk to, my own team, as you can hear Nate in the background, I have been given a lot of rap about this. But I always try to defend myself the best I can. And what I say about Ghost Adventures is from their documentary that they made in 2008, before they had a television series, up until their fourth season of their television series, I feel like they were pretty sincere. I felt like their material was real. They weren't really working for ratings or money, but I kind of noticed a change myself after season four. Things started seeming a little, I don't know, kind of just fabricated, I guess. And up to this point of 2018, I don't really lean on them as a valid resource or something I would advise people to watch and try to mimic. But the earlier days, I feel like they were pretty sincere, though. That's me personally.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you on that one.
I agree completely. Yeah, Dave and I caught their documentary one time just randomly, I think on Sci-Fi.
Yeah.
And on that documentary amazed me because they had the brick being thrown, and then they also had the apparition following the guy in front of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my gosh, this is actually pretty neat. And so then I started watching the show. I was an avid Ghost Hunters watcher at the time. So then
okay.
Then their show came out, and I was like, okay, I'm going to watch this. And I think the first time I heard Aaron scream and run out of a room, I lost a little bit of respect.
Yeah.
But I think every paranormal investigator, when you've investigated something, every single one of us has that moment where you panic and you do kind of freak out and run off. What kind of tools do you guys use when you investigate?
Nate, you want to elaborate on this one? I don't want to talk too much.
I don't, when I go on investigation, I don't do a lot of talking, which can seem kind of odd because Shuler does most of the talking.
Oh, yeah.
when I go into an investigation, the reason why I don't speak is because I don't feel like I'm connected, but at the same time, I just like to feel out what a space feels like, you know, in the moment. And
environment, right?
Yeah. I like to learn about the history of the place first, really, which I think some people don't really do, you know, as a whole. But just knowing, like, you know, what's happened there, and you know, what are some of the, you know, so-called legends that, you know, people, you know, some of the stories that get passed down from time to time. But I look at you know, going into it with like a scientific approach first, and then trying to validate, you know, what could be and what couldn't be.
So Nate, what would you say your favorite devices to use that we take on investigations would be? The DVR for EVPs.
Cause,
I mean, you don't talk much, so.
I would say the K2 meter.
Yeah.
Mostly because, like, we've had instances where it's, you know, it's kind of unexplained how it's gone off. And that kind of makes me question, like, what's making it do that?
Yeah.
Just because it's been, like, an odd situation. But that's, you know, that would probably be the closest thing that I would, you know, like using.
Yeah. What about you, Ryan?
I would probably do the K2 meter, too.
Yeah.
Because I know we use 1,000 rods.
And the millimeter. And
yeah, the millimeter, but I don't know. That's
this year, at least for you two guys, you've seen more activity with our K2 meters
yeah.
than anything,
yeah.
Which is kind of weird because past couple years, the K2 meters haven't been exactly the most promising device, but this year it has with the locations that we've selected.
Yeah.
What about you, Jordan?
When I used to do investigations years ago, I'm a promotions manager now, but I have to say the EVPs.
Yeah.
Having a chance to, you know, hear, you know, spirits and whatnot, see what kind of evidence that you got, pretty much.
It's nice and creepy, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. Hear a whole bunch of screaming or just, you know, pretty much just voices, you know, you can't hear, but you can, like, you know, distorted voices.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of with Jordan on that. The DVRs, digital voice recorders, that's my personal favorite, along with the spirit box. You know, we use an AM, FM radio and a loudspeaker. And, I mean, they both kind of work the same, but one doesn't record. But I like the audio aspect because it's kind of like a direct line with the paranormal. So it's similar to a cell phone call, I guess. You know, you're on the phone with possible entities or a spirit that's around you, and to have that possibility of a really odd interaction, I just think that's really fascinating, especially being live right there, you know, talking to you. So yeah. I think that's pretty cool.
Definitely. Now, for me, EVPs can be one of the coolest things and one of the most frustrating things, because you get those ones that you know you hear something, but you can't figure out what it is. And it drives me insane sometimes. And then you get the ones that are super clear and you can understand exactly what's being said. And those are also really fun, too.
Yeah, you're not lying on that, Amy. Not one bit.
I have some just from our house that we live in now. We have a lot of activity here and there. And Halloween seems to be our night that we like to set out the recorders and, you know, just see what happens. And there was one Halloween that I got some awesome EVPs, but I can't understand about half of them. But you can hear like this deep growling voice in a couple of them, and then some of them it's just quick little whispers, and I can't understand them, and it frustrates me. Do you have any questions, Dave?
Keeps you on the edge of your seat.
It does.
Okay, what is your mission?
I believe the four of us, we all have our own personal mission, but we've all kind of came to an agreement of a similar go, and that is to discover the unknown and to help people understand the unknown, because in the 7 years that the team's been going on, even as a hobby team, we've met a lot of people that just seem really paralyzed, I guess, at the possibilities of what's known to be the paranormal. And throughout this time of meeting these people and talking to them, it seems like they want to seek help. You know, but if you have a poltergeist or some type of really weird, crazy activity going on in your house, you know, you can't call 911 and be like, hey, I need help. I have a demon or a ghost in my house. Can you help me? You know, they'll look at you strange, call you out on witchcraft or something. So more or less, our team really wants to help people understand the unknown so they're not afraid and so they know how to approach it, even if they are by themselves at that time.
Do you guys offer any cleansing or anything like that for people who want to rid their house of spirits?
Yeah, we sure do, Amy. I'll let Nate elaborate on this because he's kind of our specialist with that.
I don't. So I've done it a couple times for people, and I've done it my personal self to a place I've lived at where it wasn't anything bad in the house. I just kind of felt a little uncomfortable where I lived, and so that was my first kind of experience with using sage. But for me, it's important to really know like what the sage does, and the fact that there's more than, you know, one type of cleansing tool. And a lot of people that I've talked to think that that's like the only way to cleanse, but there's a lot of different methods that, like herbal methods that, you know, different herbs do different things for people. But then there's also a lot of skepticism of, does that really work? And I personally feel like it does, because it's almost like you're, you know, kind of, you know, creating this like dense cloud in your house, and you know, as you open up the windows, you're like letting out whatever's caught in that cloud, whether it be negative or, you know, something that hasn't moved on. So that's really kind of my take on using it.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I do cleansings too. And for me, a lot of it's empowerment. Empowering the people that I'm cleansing for to feel that they have the ability to take charge of their home. And it's,
yeah.
And it's a lot of that, I feel, that it's a lot more of not even what you're burning, but what you are putting out of your energy.
It's a great way to look at it, too. Yeah, empowerment can go a long way.
Yeah.
What techniques do you use to stay awake and alert during investigating?
To stay awake and alert during investigating? Well, me personally, I kind of keep myself on edge by thinking about the worst case possibility. You know, if I'm not aware of my surroundings, you know, physically or spiritually, that's going to put myself in danger and also my investigators in danger, you know. So, I mean, staying alert can mean a lot of things to an investigator. I mean, you obviously want to be alert to try to gather evidence. You want to make sure that there's nothing to debunk. You want to make sure that what you're looking at or what you're experiencing is really what you believe you're experiencing, because taking one thing that's logical and taking another that's not so logical, that can really contaminate. For me personally, when it comes to staying awake and alert during an investigation, it's more or less about trying to validate what we are looking for and what we're actually experiencing, because you really want to know what you're gathering and what you're going to share with people, especially if you're making YouTube videos or you're going to do a presentation. You don't want to come off as, you know, cocky and you know for sure that you have a 10-foot-tall demon at a location, you know, when it's really just a tree in the background and there was some type of distracted noise of an animal going around and, you know, something silly. But, yeah, for me, it's to be aware to keep myself and my investigator safe and to make sure what we're gathering is as accurate as possible. What about you, Ryan, from your few investigations you've been on with us?
I guess you just have to have a mindset. You just can't go off track.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you just lose, you know.
You want to make sure you
like what you're going to be doing. Yeah. You just want to keep your focus on, like, what you're investigating and what you should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's usually how I kind of stay on track and try not to fall off the rails a little bit.
You know, and I'm glad we have Ryan on the team, too, because he's our known skeptic. And sometimes when we get the jitters, you know, Ryan's the one that's out front. He's like, you know what, whatever. You know, there's nothing out here. And then next thing you know, he's levitating. No, I'm just kidding. but it's good to have different mindsets like that, because I believe everybody has a piece of the puzzle that you can bring together. And that's how you kind of solve the puzzle, you know, having these different backgrounds and beliefs. Jordan, what about you when you used to investigate?
Pretty much the same as usual. Just staying alert of my surroundings. And like with Ryan, too, you know, coming in as a skeptic, but at the same time keeping an open mind, too. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, say, for example, you know, a noise you could hear, it could just be the wind, unless, you know, what you were saying just now, levitating.
Yeah.
That's enough evidence as it is. Being thrown up against the wall and then coming back down and then going back up against the wall again, that's enough evidence for me.
That would not, you would not lose my respect for running out of the room screaming if that happened to you.
Yeah, you could scream like Aaron then, couldn't you, Amy?
Exactly.
What about you, Nate? What helps you?
I mean, it all goes back to the history of the location. You know, we try to, you know, make sure, like, we've been to a couple places where we've done a little bit of research or as much as we can. There's been some places where there hasn't been as much research about the location. And if we try to find, like, if we've been to a cemetery, you know, there's been, you know, instances where, you know, there's been, you know, a cemetery that's named after a girl. We end up not being fined. You know, that gravestone or a lot of information. So, like, I really try to focus on trying to, you know, be mindful of, you know, just what's really happened.
Yeah. You like looking for the facts.
Yeah. Like, really just thinking about that the entire time and, you know, why, you know, did this happen? Why are people saying this? And, you know, we're not getting anything. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
That's good. Yeah. Well, what about you guys? So what kind of helps you when you're in those type of situations?
Red Bull.
Red Bull. Not just pure adrenaline, huh?
Sometimes. You've been on those cases, I'm sure, where there's just nothing happening. And you're just like, okay,
oh, yeah.
Either something needs to happen or I need some spike of energy.
I'd say the few times I've gone on searches and stuff, I notice my adrenaline's just going 100% anyway. Like,
yeah,
I'm not normally like a jump scare kind of person, but for some reason when we've done some of these studies and stuff, I've noticed I've been like super jittery. I think it's because I want to find something more than anything. So my adrenaline just going.
I tend to also notice that if I'm on one and I do start to get a little tired, there's always seems to be around that time something happens. And I like to think of it as that's the time that they're like, oh, no, we're still here.
But, yeah, it's like they know you're starting to become more vulnerable. It's like, let's wake them up.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, that question about staying awake came from our 7-year-old daughter. We were talking to her about, you know, interviewing you guys. And she's convinced we're interviewing the Ghostbusters. And her next question, was, awesome. can they tell us what the green guy's made out of?
Ectoplasm.
So she thinks you guys are the Ghostbusters. So there you go.
Well, that is adorable.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Bless her little heart. Yeah, we're the real life Ghostbusters. We may not have the proton guns, but we'll do our best to keep people safe from Mr. Puffed or State Puffed. Or...
The Statue of Liberty walking.
Yeah.
What other questions do you have, Dave?
Now, Jordan, you were saying that you were engaged by an unseen force?
Uh
oh. Oh, man.
Yeah, he's going back to that story about 2012.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Okay, so basically. This was back in 2012, as Shuler said. It was me and other investigators. We was coming out of the women's ward. And keep in consideration, like, it's October. It's cold outside. Like, my body started shaking and whatnot. And I thought, instead of my body shaking, it was shivering because of it being cold. But it was a different type of shake. And I felt as if something was, like, entering inside of my body. And, you know, everybody was wondering if I was okay, and I wasn't okay, obviously, because I kept shaking. My body was out of control. I couldn't control it to that point.
Now, do you remember why this started happening to you, Mr. Childs? It didn't happen randomly, did it?
It didn't happen randomly, like Shuler said. He's calling me out. So before all of that was happening, when we was at the women's ward, I was provoking the spirits. I was cussing at them, and, you know, I was just trying to do everything I can to get evidence because we had been at Central State for long periods of time. So I was like, okay, guys, watch this. And I went ahead and done my thing, which is definitely one of the worst mistakes I've done. But to the story, though, all I ever remember still to this day, and I promise on everything, is being at this church. I was inside the Shuler's car, and I was like, Skyler or Shuler, what are we doing inside of the car? And he said, Jordan, you got borderline possessed. And I'm just like, are you serious? He's like, dead serious. And I wanted to do another investigation, but Shuler was like, nah, I can't, especially after what happened. And that's why, like, I really don't do investigations anymore. Well, the last investigation that I did was back in 2013. I mean, obviously, I know better not to, you know, provoke the spirits and whatnot, because you never know what's in there. And, it was just a lesson learned. And, you know, me making that rookie paranormal investigator mistake, I guess. So I just play it safe, go around the places, promote us. And, yeah, by the way, I'm not borderline possessed. I don't think I am.
You listed it.
I'd be having superpowers and stuff, throwing people against the wall. So
you'd be a super villain.
Now, I mean, that kind of plays into your theory about what you give to them, you get back from them.
Exactly.
Kind of like that, karmic response.
Yeah.
And what's crazy, too, is I was actually telling the spirits that I would offer my energy. And that's definitely my fault,
like,
on that part.
It's like you combine into one, like with the symbiotes. You became one with Venom.
Oh.
Yeah. I do have a theory that's... Well, I mean, if you watched you know, Ghost Adventures or Ghost Hunters, they get very different results. Ghost Adventures, they tend to go in more aggressive and provoking and all of that, and they get the bigger bam. Whereas on Ghost Hunters, it was, they'd go in calm, and, you know, they most exciting thing they get would maybe a touch or a tug here or there. And yeah. I think well, it's because the energy we project is that what they use.
With Ghost Hunters, the thing that what I liked about them is that they seem to go in wanting to really learn about the location and the history. So, like, a lot of the shows started with, like, you know, at least some sort of history about, you know, the building. Whereas with Ghost Adventures, they kind of went into it, you know, later on where it was, you know, they kind of really only focused on the negative part and not they really, did. You know, yeah. not every place is negative. Like, there has to be some sort of, you know,
different environments,
negative energy.
Yeah. Different environments with different approaches are kind of important, but they don't seem to feel that way.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, I like to look at it as ghosts were human once. So treat them the way you want to be treated. And it's nice when you find a group that does it that way without just, you know, waving their arms and like, come get me, you know. When it's more of an investigation and you get the scientific knowledge. Because also, skeptics, if you don't come out with some kind of scientific proof, they're just like, it was rigged. And if you have some kind of scientific proof and you can show them, hey, but look at this, this, and this happened at the same time, isn't this something?
No, you're so right on that, Amy, really. Yeah.
Yeah. Because anybody can go in yelling and cussing at a ghost. But unless you've got a recorder to catch them yelling and cussing back at you, it doesn't mean anything.
Yep. So right.
All right. So
with the skeptics, we talk about this quite a bit in our podcast, how over the recent years, how it's easier to find groups of people who agree with what your type of thinking when it comes to paranormal. I mean, growing up, of course, we're in the Bible Belt of the United States, so it was a lot of, you know, nonsense to talk about paranormal stuff. But over the last, I'd say, decade, it's more people are open to it. Have you guys found that's made your jobs easier to find places to do research for? Or is it more difficult because now everyone thinks their house is haunted? Or?
Well, to be honest with you, I've noticed a difference myself. With people being more open and accepting of the paranormal and the spirit world being real and coexisting with, you know, our world as the physical plane. But as for having personal experiences with people, you know, believing more of their houses are haunted or, you know, it's a biblical or religious thing, I haven't had a personal experience with people that we've spoken with or that we've got to meet over the past couple years, but I will say that people, when they talk to me, I see people are more interested than, you know, provoked or afraid of what we do. You know, it's not like, oh, Shuler, that's not good. You shouldn't do that. You're going to go to hell. Or, Shuler, that's witchcraft. What are you thinking? It's more of like, oh, Shuler, that's really cool. I mean, aren't you scared? Or so it's kind of cool to see that at least the majority of Indiana and the surrounding states, people I've spoken with, they seem more accepting and more interested, which I believe is a very important thing because obviously there is something after the physical life. I mean, from my experience, I know there's so much more. It's not just you get up, you go to work, you come home, make dinner, go to sleep. There is more to it than that.
Definitely. And, you know, here in Oklahoma, we're just now starting to get to where people are more accepting of it, I feel. And I know growing up, Chad and I lived in a very haunted house. And people would always say, you know, you need to have a priest come out there and bless it. You know, it's a demon. Well, no, this thing never did anything mean to a single person. Well, not true. He picked on our dad quite a bit. But the rest of us, he was really nice to. And, you know, he became, really in all honesty, if there was ever a ghost that was like, you know, Casper and like a part of the family. It was in that house. I mean, we just, things would happen and it was like, oh, it's just the ghost doing something. And
yeah,
that's really cool.
And so for us, it was just always part of our life. And so we'd talk about it with people and, oh, we'd get shunned. It was like, oh, that's bad. You don't dabble with that. That's the devil.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's starting to shift a little bit down here a little bit.
Well, I've noticed like my group of friends, like growing up, yeah, it was, friends weren't allowed to come hang out because their family was so, you know, super religious, and they weren't allowed to be around us talking about ghosts and spirits and stuff like that. But now almost every one of my friends is a believer and is open about it. Like,
wow.
Back in the day, like I said, everyone would be, if they did, were friends were into the paranormal, they kind of hit it. But now, I mean, almost all my friends are straight out, you know, talk about ghosts and demons and stuff, which is something that 15 years ago would never have happened. So I just kind of enjoy how the world's, because I guess people are becoming more open about the spiritual realm. So
now, do you guys just deal with ghosts, or do you kind of go into more paranormal stuff like aliens or even cryptids?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Primarily, our focus is on, you know, ghosts and spirits, specters and demons and other, more spiritual type of entities. But we are pretty open as a whole. I personally believe in aliens and UFOs, you know, ufology and cryptids, you know, like skinwalkers, the Wendigo and Loch Ness and all that stuff. But I'll let the rest of my guys kind of talk about it. What about you, Ryan? Do you kind of have a belief on that at all as our primary skeptic? It's all right. Be as honest as you got to.
No, I mean, the only thing I need is evidence.
Yeah.
So if I don't see it, then I'm not going to say that you're lying about it. It's just that I don't see it.
Yeah, you don't see the logic.
I have to see it from my own eyes for me to say, okay, yeah, now I believe you.
Okay.
That deal.
Yeah.
As I mean, do I believe something's out there? Yes. Is there aliens? Maybe. I don't know what it could be.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I just have to see some type of evidence myself where I can, you know, agree.
What about you, Mr. Childs?
Anything is possible. The world is definitely full of mysteries, ghosts, spirits, demons, aliens. I believe in it all.
Pretty open.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I mean, there's logical proof of it. So, I mean, some people might have, you know, fabricated stories, but it's like with me, you know, we've all had, you know, similar or different experiences involving everything, you know. So yeah. I definitely believe there's something out there. I'm very open-minded, so I don't think anybody's crazy, you know, unless they're walking around the street and with a wig on. Well, you know what? I don't even judge, so, you know, go ahead and do what you do, pretty much. Like I said, I'm open to anything. I'm a laid-back guy, so.
What about you, Nate?
I'm more on Jordan Schuler's side when it comes to being open-minded to everything. But that's just how I was raised in a, you know, Air Force family, moving around and meeting a bunch of different people. So I got to learn a bunch of different, you know, religions and stories, and, you know, just that allowed me to really be more open-minded to a lot of different ideas and what other people believe, and not, you know, not one thing is the right way. And so, but that, as a group, we kind of operate that way.
Totally agree. Well, what about you guys?
I like to call myself a skeptic believer. Because,
hey, there you go.
You know, I believe anything is possible. But before I, like, devote 100% of my belief to it, I need some kind of evidence. And I think that's because I've witnessed so much that when I hear other people's stories, sometimes their stories seemed a little too elaborate, if that makes sense. And so then that's when I question it. Because I can say that we grew up in a really haunted house, but we didn't have stuff flying across the wall or the room. We didn't have, you know, things like that happen. We'd have the sink turn on when you go to wash your hands. The dryer door would open, you know, as you're putting clothes in it. Lawnmowers would be going on their own. You know, we had random things like that, But it was nothing that was ever, like, jump scare or aggressive. So anytime I hear stories of, I guess, malevolent spirits, I always question it. Because I've never personally experienced a malevolent ghost. So it's kind of like, well, is it really malevolent, or are you just giving it the appearance of being malevolent because it scared you? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, your brain messes with you.
The ideometer effect.
Yeah. I mean, you can, you know, kind of get yourself hyped up to the point where you're almost imagining that it's doing that to you.
Yeah.
So I can understand where you're coming from.
Yeah. I need to see it myself. And I need, or, you know, just something to just kind of show me that, all right, this could be true. And sometimes when I hear stories that homeowners tell me, I try to take that and think of, well, what actually happened? And just go from there. You know, we did one investigation. It wasn't really an investigation. We went to do a cleansing. And we walked into this hallway, and the hallway was lined with, like, Christmas lights and mirrors. And our K2 lit up and never went off. And I was like,
crazy.
Okay, so this is exactly what they're experiencing, is this high EMF in this hallway, which is probably causing them to hear and see things like crazy. And so I went through and I cleansed the house, and then I set him down and I kind of explained to him what I thought was actually happening. And they were like, oh, well, that makes sense. And they haven't really had any problems since then. So
that's nice. You know, having a breakdown like that, you know, it can help people understand the supernatural and the unknown logically. And, you know, when it comes back to it, I totally agree with Ryan on this. Evidence is everything.
Yeah.
It really is.
So what about you, Chad? Are you a skeptic or a believer?
I'm kind of like you, a skeptic believer. I'm one of those, I want it to be real, but at the same time, I look at it logically and, okay, well, I have nothing to base it on, so I can't say it for sure if it's real or not. But honestly, like we talk about, we have a werewolf episode, and the whole time I'm just wishing they were all real, because the idea of a werewolf is awesome. But
oh, that'd be great.
So it's one of those, I want things to be real, but at the same time, I'm going to be skeptic first until I have evidence. Same with aliens and all that. Until I've actually witnessed them or have seen enough evidence of them, I'm going to be skeptic. But at the same time, I think it'd be really cool.
What about you, Dave?
Well, I'm a seeker of knowledge, and I believe that truth is fluid and subjective, unique to every person.
True. Everybody experiences the world a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's a great way to look at it, Dave. I like that.
All right, what's your next question, Dave? I know you had another one.
Well, who's the most valuable member of your team?
Well,
I guess Ryan has the answer. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, let's go. Ryan. Everybody's valuable.
That's a very true answer, what Ryan said. Everyone's valuable.
All for one for all.
Going back to the pirate days, man. But no, like Ryan's saying, in all seriousness, when it comes down to it, we can't just point a finger at one person and say that's the most valuable, because myself and Jordan, we are actually the only two remaining members since we started in 2011, and Nate and Ryan are actually the newest. But without these guys, without all these guys, this team wouldn't be where or what it is to this day. So personally, I'm very thankful to have these guys, for real. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, that's really good that y'all operate as a team, and that no real, if one of you were to leave, then the whole team would be kaput, pretty much.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it'd be like a broken car, man. You got to have four wheels to drive.
Yep.
That's our problem. We only got three. We're gimp. No.
Our fourth only shows up like every third, fourth episode. So.
Yeah, our fourth shows up every once in a while.
Yeah.
We give him a hard time about that one. Of all the investigations you've done, what is the best evidence that you personally think that you've found?
Do you guys like to start? I feel like I've been taking the mic too much.
I haven't had anything like negative happen to me, but we went to a cemetery here called the Elizabethtown Cemetery.
Yeah.
And we ended up not really staying the whole night because it was really buggy outside, and we were kind of getting attacked. Yeah, it was kind of plague-like outside. And we went through like a whole bottle of spray, and nothing was helping. So
it wasn't.
Yeah, but we were on our last question on the EVP session, and we were in an area where there was a lot of trees, and one of the trees that was a little bit, I want to say about 6 or 7 feet away, was a chestnut tree.
Walnut tree.
And during, while Shuler was talking, tree, and it was pretty loud.
Yeah.
We just, you know, kind of picked it up as like, it was a walnut that fell. But about 5 to 10 seconds after that, I had my back toward what I heard was the sound of footsteps running through the grass. And at first I kind of, you know, had to really register, did I really just hear that? Because it didn't sound like an animal, like, you know, running through the grass. It actually sounded like somebody, you know, with their shoes on running through the grass, like just away. Like somebody had jumped from the tree and ran. And that was like kind of that was the first time I've ever experienced something like that. I didn't really know how to process that.
Yeah.
Oh, you screamed.
No, I did not.
Ryan's trying to call him out.
I was pretty excited about it. I talked about it for like 20 minutes after it. Because I was just, it just was really odd that
that happened. You had to process it because it was weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I've had a lot of experiences since 2011, but I don't want to keep talking about the same story. I feel like I do, and it's always going back to Central State, the mental institution, with what Jordan was talking about with his story. But I'm going to try to shoot for something different. Let's see. It's a recent investigation that we had done this year. It was a crybaby bridge, which I'm sure all states have some type of form of bridge that's known as crybaby bridge. But the state of Indiana, we have one here in Avon, Indiana, and it's even got its own little door plaque that talks about it and even the paranormal history to it. It's kind of interesting that a park would actually put that in there, but it's pretty cool that they're open to it like that. But this investigation, I was with one investigator that's no longer on the team currently and myself, so it's just the two of us, and it was pretty late in the evening. We'd been there for maybe 4 or 5 hours, and throughout that whole time, I mean, it was really weird because in the front of the bridge, it's an open bridge, you know, it's not a deep tunnel or anything like that. It's a train track bridge too, so above us is a train track, and everything else is pretty much just woods underneath with a little road for cars. But in the front of the bridge, we were getting a whole bunch of spikes on the K2 meter. It's really weird because the mel meter wasn't going off. We hadn't gotten any EVPs for the whole 4 or 5 hours that we were there. No pictures, nothing on video. I mean, it was a pretty quiet night other than the K2 meter going off in that one specific spot. And of course, going in as a skeptic, but wanting to come out as a believer that the location's, you know, active, I thought to myself, maybe it's the power lines or some type of power box, because that was pretty close. There was some power lines. There was a power box, and we actually took our K2s and our mel meter over there to test. And we didn't get anything on either device until we got right up on it. Like, we literally had to be right up on this power box to get some type of signal. And once we got away, of course, it died down. But once we got in front of the bridge again, that's where we started getting the signal. And the signal on the K2 would spike up to, you know, yellow or orange. It'd die back down. It'd go back up. So it was like something was moving around. It wasn't a straight signal. Well, long story short, we were there for a couple more hours, and we had a really bad lightning storm, and it rained, so we had to stop for like a good 45 minutes. And after that, we went back to the front, started doing more EVPs, brought out the K2, and pretty much ready to call tonight, the other investigator and I. And as we were about to leave, up on the slope, going up towards the hill to the top of the train tracks, you know, there's a whole bunch of rocks, the train track rocks. And as we were beginning to leave, some of the rocks started falling down towards us, like something was trying to crawl up or run up the hill to get away from us. So as soon as that happened, my investigator and I, we were totally spooked, ripped out our lights, and we flooded the area. We looked up the hill. We looked around the trees. We looked above on the bridge. There were no animals, no people. There's just nothing that could have caused these rocks to move the way that they did. It literally sounded like somebody put some force to this where they were running down. There wasn't an earthquake or any type of trembling going on. I don't know. It was super creepy. It only happened once. I can't say for sure that it was a intelligent and very powerful spirit, but it was very odd and peculiar. So I find that as a very interesting investigation that I've had of 2018 for sure.
Very cool.
What about you?
Well, a borderline possession story, even though I don't remember it. I remember Schuler was telling me that I was kicking, cussing, punching, and carrying on. And like I said, I don't remember that at all. And it's interesting because, like I said before, I'm a very laid-back person. And, you know, having something inside of me, you know, doing that, as I'm very unacknowledgeable of it, is definitely interesting but creepy at the same time. And there is another story, too. This was probably, like, 2011. I believe it was my first investigation. It was me, Schuler, and an investigator that's no longer on the team. But I remember we was getting ready to leave Crown Hill Cemetery, and Schuler had asked if there's anybody here before we leave out. Would you make a sound right now? And what was it, about 2 or 3 seconds after that, we heard this fire crackling sound for like 12 seconds. And the whole area just started smelling like a bonfire. And that was, it still to this day, I'm speechless about it, you know, and it's definitely very interesting to me that happened.
It happened so quick, and it was but it was so vivid at the same time.
Yeah. Very.
I remember that. What about you, Ryan? Well, what's your best investigation?
So I guess my best one is probably my first investigation, which is the Tunnelton Tunnel. So, you know, you kind of feel like I'm actually doing this, and like I'm a real investigator, you know, going to your first investigation type of deal, because you want to go out there and try to find something. You're, you know, like nothing happened for experience, you know, doing it. And because I remember we heard, what was it, coyote sound?
Yeah,
we thought it was coyote, but it just howled once or whatever sound, and it didn't do it again.
It's almost like somebody yelled.
Yeah, it sounded weird.
Yeah, because there were people there, but it was just weird that it just happened once and you didn't hear it again.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, you hear sounds and stuff, but, I mean, your first investigation is always going to be, I mean, it's going to be weird, but it's going to be one that, you know, you're most likely going to remember.
Yeah. What about you guys? Do you have any pretty remarkable investigations or experiences, you know, with the paranormal?
Well, I have to say, can you hear me? Sorry, our mic's kind of, Dave moved, so there we go.
No, you guys are good. We can hear you pretty good.
All right. I have to say, my most memorable experience was actually a personal experience that I had. And it was Dave and I had just gotten married. And we had a boxer and a mutt dog that were in kennels. And it was like 3 o'clock in the morning. And, excuse me, the dog started barking like crazy. And I'm laying in bed like, oh, I don't want to get up and go let him out. Fine, I'll get up. And I opened my eyes to go put the dogs outside. And sitting at the foot of my bed was, I thought, Dave getting up to get him. I was like, yay, I don't have to get up. And I go to roll back over, and Dave's laying in bed with me. And, of course, it scared the crap out of me. And I rolled back, and I looked at this man sitting at the foot of the bed, and I'm just kind of watching him. Because at this point, I'm still thinking somebody's broken into the house. And as I'm watching him, I start realizing that I can see the TV is on behind him, and I can see the TV through him. But he's still kind of a dark shadow. So it's not like a bright TV, but I can still see the light. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I know what this is. This is an apparition. And I just sat there and watched it for a while. And he just kind of sat there. And I don't know what it... I was trying to debunk it as I'm laying there, like, all right, am I causing this to happen? And I move a little bit, and when I move, he sits up straight. And then he turns towards me. And then I just panicked at that point and shut my eyes real tight. And then with my eyes closed, I thought, oh, crap, when I open my eyes, he's going to be right in my face. And so then I just laid there with my eyes closed for a little bit and then, you know, kind of slowly opened them and, you know, opened them without actually opening them to see if he was still there. And he was completely gone. And then the dogs had quit barking. And...
Jeez, Amy. Yeah, I would have been sleeping in my car.
We moved not long after that. What about you, Chad?
I'd say through the few investigations I've done, I haven't really caught a whole lot of things going on. But the craziest thing, or one of the craziest things, was actually in that same house Amy was talking about. This is back when we were stupid. It was me, Amy, my cousin Austin. We decided we were going to do a Ouija. Started doing Ouija, and then all of us at the exact same time heard something in her kitchen. And then we all just looked into the same corner of the kitchen, like we could all see something, but none of us could describe what it was. And we all just kind of got this really creepy, like, something's there. Like, nothing good is there, but something bad is in the corner. And I think that's probably the most, the thing that freaked me out the most of doing any kind of investigation or seance or anything like that. But we have since learned not to use Ouijas.
Yeah, I just don't do Ouija anymore. Just there's too much out there that you just don't really want to deal with.
Yep.
And Dave.
Man.
I know you don't have any paranormal experience. Like, you've never experienced anything paranormal.
No, I sure haven't.
But have you been on investigations? Do you remember anything that was stood out in your mind?
No.
No.
Not really.
Dave's on the in our group, and he's never actually experienced anything paranormal. And I find it really cool that he's, because he comes to it with a completely open mind, you know. So
we know that that's really unique, and that's cool that Dave, you can do that, because it's more or less to me a bittersweet, because at least you don't have to worry about the weird things being real right now, but at the same time, if it's something that piques your interest, it's like, well, it can happen any moment now. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, I believe in, like, a spirit world that's all around us, so I think even if I did see something like that, it really wouldn't, it wouldn't bother me. It was just, I almost expect to see it at some point.
Well, yeah, because actually, you just said that, and it reminded me, why we have two kids. We have a 7-year-old and a 2-year-old. And so our living room is littered with toys. And it's not uncommon for one of the toys to just randomly go off on us.
Oh, man.
No one's near it, and it'll just start making noise. And that happens all the time. We're to the point we don't even acknowledge it anymore. But the other day, there was like a 4-square ball, like the rubber bouncy ball, sitting in the middle of our floor. And it just started kind of rolling all over the floor by itself. And Dave kind of patted me on the arm. He's like, look at the ball. And I look at it, and sure enough, it's just kind of going crazy. And then it just kind of settles down and then stops. So then we sat there trying to recreate it, trying to walk past it, trying to see, you know, what had happened. We could never really say what it was, but it was really an interesting moment.
Yeah, seriously, I would say.
But yeah, that type of stuff happens so much around our house that half the time I don't even think about it anymore. If it's not something that jumps out at me, then it now just goes into another file in my brain that I pull up later. I'm like, oh yeah, that was kind of weird.
Yeah, it's just our new normal.
A part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, today I was putting my makeup on this morning, and I swore I heard somebody walk up behind me to the point that I jumped and turned. And there was nobody there. The cat was laying on the bed. He was kind of looking off in an odd direction. And I was like, okay, somebody just came up behind me, but I don't know who that was. But I have a rule in our house. Spirits are welcome in our house, but they're not allowed to show themselves because of that one man sitting at the foot of my bed. At that point, I was like, I don't want to see you anymore. You can be here. You can move things. Yeah. You can do that. Just don't jump out at me. I don't do jump scares.
Yeah, that's enough for me to want to retire from seeing that stuff.
Yeah.
Man.
Well, do you have any more questions, Dave?
I can't think of any.
Do you guys have any questions for us, or have anything you want to share with us?
I mean, you guys pretty much covered a good milestone of questions, but I'm just curious on your guys' aspect. How often do you guys do investigations?
I can't say we do a whole lot of investigations anymore because of the kids. It kind of puts a damper on when we can go out at night.
Oh, yeah.
But I think the last one we did all together. No.
That wasn't the last one. So
Dave and I know we did one. It was like that cleansing that we did. So I'd say I probably do one or two a year anymore. But most of what I do anymore is just cleansings. I don't know what your belief is on sensitives and mediums.
Oh, yeah, we're very open to that. Don't worry.
All right. Most people say, Amy, you're nuts. But I'm a little bit sensitive and a little bit of a medium. I'm not, you know, John Edwards or whatever. But I can pick up the energies. I can tell when there's something there. I can kind of get a feel for what it is, who it is, that type of thing. So I like to go and help people by cleansing their house, explaining to them who's there, why they're there, that type of thing. That's more of what we do anymore. And then we do the podcast. So, and we just kind of talk about all our experiences because we have a couple of decades under our belt when it comes to hauntings and experiences. So it's like, you know,
nice, Amy.
We're too old to go and do it anymore. We got the kids. We'll just sit and talk about it now.
Well, I mean, even for the fact that you guys can't really be as proactive as you may have been or want to, I mean, for the fact that you guys retain so much knowledge, you know, and you have the experience that you do, I'm sure you guys will be a vital help for a lot of people in the future that may need help or that are looking to become, you know, future investigators. And that's always good to have people like that to, you know, lean on and get the proper knowledge and help from.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the paranormal community is great. I don't think I've met a single person in the paranormal community that's, you know, you can be crazy and they don't think you're crazy and it's really nice.
Exactly. It really is.
I do have one more question for you guys. So why is it Stay Frosty?
Why Stay Frosty? Well, I actually kind of picked that up in probably like late 2011, early 2012. And the reason why is because my very first quote-unquote ghost experience, I guess, was at Central State Hospital, the mental institution, and it was down in the basement of the women's ward. And I was down there with one other investigator. It was a two-man investigator night. And we were communicating with the allegedly known spirits to be there. And after like a good, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 minutes of doing EVPs. I had a little like MP3 player. It wasn't a professional DVR or anything, but it was a little MP3 player. But we were doing an EVP session, and a good 15, 20 minutes into it, my flashlight, I was the only one with a flashlight at the time, it started blinking, and I had fresh Energizer batteries. We had just stopped at a gas station and bought a really big pack of them, so I put fresh batteries in, but the flashlight started to blink. And it finally went out. It went completely black. It was decently warm. I wouldn't say frigid. I know I say late 2011, you know, early 2012. But I wouldn't say it was super cold, which was kind of weird, you know, for those months. But I noticed a very, very drastic change, a big change in the temperature whenever the light went out. And my bones were chilled to the bone, literally, no pun intended. But after that moment, I got touched, actually, once the light went out. I felt like a hand actually grabbed me on my right shoulder, and it was like the bones. I could feel the bones of all the fingers and the palm, and I could literally feel the fingers moving one at a time and grabbing my shoulder. And when I was touched, it wasn't only the sensation of the hand that I felt, but it was like an electric vibe, a sensation going through my shoulder and down my mid back. And then as soon as I felt this, of course I freaked out and I said, "Don't touch me, get off of me." And I started hitting my flashlight at the same time on my other hand. and it started to break back. You know, the light started coming back on, and the temperature kind of let up off me a little bit. It wasn't as chilly, and everything went back to normal. Flashlight came back on. We were able to quickly jog out of there. But ever since that moment, that experience right there, the sensation of being that cold, that chill to the bone, it just kind of inspired me to say stay frosty. Because if you're staying frosty, you know you're doing something right. You got something around you.
I like it. I like it. Yeah, I saw that on your website. And then you messaged one of your messages, you said that. And I was like, all right, I got to know what this is.
Oh, yeah. Stay frosty. You're doing it right.
I like that. And I know exactly what you're talking about, that electrical feeling. But that's definitely the feeling I get when I walk into, when you walk into them. Have you ever walked into a spirit and you just feel the charge all over you? Is that what you're talking
about? If I have, Amy, if I have, I wouldn't say that I was knowledgeable at the time, but I would say it felt something weird like that, like a tingly sensation or even the cobweb sensation.
Yeah.
If you guys are familiar with that. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I know exactly what you're talking about there. Well, I appreciate you guys doing this. This has been awesome.
Right on. Well, thank you guys for having us on your podcast and, you know, talking with us. It was wonderful to meet with you guys and talk about the paranormal. Yeah. It's always fun.
Always fun.
Do you guys want to plug any, like, your website or your YouTube channels or anything like that?
Definitely.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we appreciate it, guys. Through Facebook, you can reach us by just typing in PILT Paranormal or Paranormal Investigations and Observations Team. We have an Instagram, which is PILT Paranormal. We also have a website, which is PILTParanormal.com. And we also have a YouTube channel, but we haven't really got that up and running yet. We have a lot of videos that we're still working on. But again, once we have that going, you can find us on YouTube at PILT Paranormal as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much.
Thank
you guys. This has been so fun.
Yeah, it was good to meet you guys. Thank you.
Thank you guys.
Bye, guys.
Y'all have a great night.
All right, you too. Thank you. Well, that's going to do it for today's episode. I want to thank you guys for listening, and another thank you to PIOT. That was just an awesome interview. That was a lot of fun. I hope we get to do that with some other groups later on.
Oh, yeah, me too.
If you enjoyed that and you're a paranormal investigator or you have a group that does, you know, anything paranormal, reach out to us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at UNPNormalcy. You can also email us at UNPNormalcy@gmail.com, and we look forward to hearing from you. Please rate us on Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts, and review us, rate us, all that fun stuff, so we can get more people's ear.
Also, go to our Patreon.
Oh yes, we have our Patreon up now. Just $1 gets you bonus episodes and gets you mentioned on the podcast, and there's different tiers from there. And until next time,
keep digging.
And you guys, we have our first Patreon shout out. Want to shout out to Leo in Arizona. Thank you so much for your donation.
Thanks, Leo.
Thank you so much.
And anybody can go onto our Patreon page and donate and get a shout out on the website or on the website, on the podcast. And we'll be uploading some bonus content to it very soon. And we can't wait. Thanks, Leo.